Blog Talk Radio.
This is Down South and Dirty with Scout Smith and Stacey Hopkins. We're here.
Hey.
Now, this Sunday, we're talking about inequality in our fourth installment of our multi-part series on inequality, America's biggest problem. In this particular segment or episode, we're going to be talking about gender inequality. And if you've been, following Down South and Dirty, you know we've been doing this inequality series, and you know it pretty much stems from us being major Bernie Sanders supporters. But gender equality is more than just boys and girls. You know, there's an LGBTQ component. There's financial and legal components. There's a whole bunch of different things, and gender equality just isn't about feminism. You got different sides of the coin. So we're going to dig into that. But as you all know, we got two segments that we do before we dig into our major subject, which one is the burn treatment, which is that is all things Bernie Sanders, and then we're going to do our dirty list, which is basically us poking folks in the eye and calling out the bullshit that takes place in the political spectrum, either nationally, regionally, or locally. We ask that callers please hold up to about 2:30 before you start calling in. So let's go in with it. What's the burn treatment?
Yeah, Bernie has been, a lot of air has been sucked out of the room between we had the Grand Inquisition of Hillary Clinton by the Benghazi House Committee. But Bernie has continued to just keep his grind, he's steady on his grind, and he's speaking to us for us. And for this Bernie Sanders supporter, it was much appreciated because, as he said during the debate, frankly, I'm tired about your damn email. So, but what he has talked about is the problem with Exxon, and him and Elizabeth Warren came out very forcefully against what has happened. Also, Exxon, they're not the most environmentally friendly people on the planet, and Exxon knew, a lot of things that they were doing that was hurting the planet. As far back as the 1980s, but they have been going buck wild around the country and, destroying the planet. So he has come out forcefully against Exxon. Also, him and Elizabeth Sanders came out. I don't know if anybody's up on what's going on in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is experiencing a debt crisis that is caused by, you guessed it, Wall Street. And once again, we're seeing capitalism for their gains, socialism for their losses. They're trying to use austerity and not allowing Puerto Rico to refinance their debt. Puerto Rico is not a U.S. state, but it is a territory. So it is kind of different than, if it was a state, it would be allowed to restructure its debt. Right now, they are trying to force austerity and same thing we've seen here, raising taxes, cutting health care, fire, you know, pensions, selling stuff. So Bernie and Senator Sanders came out at a committee hearing and basically blasted Wall Street for, you know, it's a self-manufactured crisis. Also, Bernie was at the Iowa Jefferson Jackson dinner. If you have not seen the clip on C-SPAN, you can watch his comments in full entirety. He came out and he basically blasted the GOP for their selective amnesia of how we got to be where we are right now. And he also gave people a little bit of a synopsis about his political life and what he has done. He's also slammed Hillary Clinton, which kind of goes into part of my dirty list about, I don't know if everyone has seen her appearance on Rachel Maddow this week, and she was asked by Rachel Maddow about DOMA and the 93 crime bill. And basically her answer was, well, we did this to be proactive, to protect you from them. If you were protecting me from them by bringing these bills, I'd hate, you know, what were they going to do? You know, I mean, it was like, you know, to hear that was like a slap in the face. You know, being an African-American female and knowing and seeing the impact upon family, friends, and others in my life, in my community, of what the 93 crime bill wrought, that was an insult. It really was. We're protecting you from them. You know, that if that's the best you can come up, just say my bad. We did wrong, and I'll do my way to correct it, but you still are denying culpability in it. You were shilling for that bill. It wasn't your bill. It was your husband's. Okay, we got that. You were lobbying Congress to push that bill. You didn't know of the unintended consequences. Nothing wrong with that so much, but refusing to admit it and then try to pawn it off like, well, if we didn't do it, they were going to come in and destroy you. That simply doesn't cut it. I'm sorry. So, but Bernie has been, you know, growing. Big ups to everyone who came out to Iowa. It was awesome to see the crowds of people, the parade or, you know, the procession that was walking with him, to hear the crowds in the room. It clearly, Sanders supporters did their thing up in Iowa. So if you're listening to us and you're in Iowa and you're feeling the burn, pat yourself on the back because you guys showed out. And this is just Iowa, okay? Wait till we get to other people. So, you know, I know a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters are kind of like they're, you know, starting to feel a bit overwhelmed, you know, by, you know, the surge, so-called surge with Hillary, with the Benghazi committee hearing. It's only temporary because nothing that we saw addresses any of the issues that we're concerned with. And when we get back to the issues, we know who has the upper hand. So just maintain the even strength, keep pushing, get out there, do your your flyering, do your canvassing, you know, keep spreading that information on Facebook, but also try to do things to work outside of that, the social media realm, because that's where the real battlefield is. He who gets the most voters wins the election. Right. Bottom line, it's just that simple.
Right.
So, and if you have events, put them up on the Bernie Sanders site. If you're looking for events, go to map.berniesanders.com. But the easiest way to find and reach other Bernie supporters is through that website. You know, put it on there. Create a Facebook page event if you'd like to go with it. But definitely get it up there.
Yeah. And another thing that, you know, that I'm seeing and that I'm pushing as I talk to people, you know, a lot of people say, I like Bernie. And we've been talking about this for I like Bernie, but then there's this comma, then there's this but.
Yeah.
And You know, my mother always told me when you use the word but, it cancels out everything that comes out came before the but. You know, if you're going to be a Hillary supporter, now there's a couple of friends of mine who are Hillary supporters, and I really respect the reasons why they support Hillary. Okay? Most of the people that I know that support Hillary and that I can respect are people from the business world. They operate very closely to Wall Street. They are not necessarily members of the working middle class.
Right.
So I can understand their motivation. However, when I got people going because, oh, she can win. Well, anybody can win if you vote for him. And that's what I'm telling people. If you like Bernie, believe in what he says, go put your support behind Bernie. And whenever the primary election in your presidential preference primary in your state takes place, go vote Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
Second, Democrats, and this is probably going to lead into my dirty list. Democrat, matter of fact, it will. This is the bridge from the burn treatment to the dirty list.
Take it to the bridge.
Okay. Democrats, I know we want to make history. We got to get off of every election has to be historical. Okay? We're looking for demographic. We always trying to make demographic history. Okay? We figure, oh, it was so wonderful when Obama got elected. Oh my God, I want to. It's like drugs, people. If you use a drug the first time, you're usually never going to be that high ever again. Okay, you will never be that high again. The first time you smoked weed, you will never be that high. The first time you got drunk, you will never be that drunk. Because it's
new
to you. You can try. And that's what we keep doing. We keep trying to get high off of buying some pot. You know, we got a black man, so now we got a woman on the ballot. Oh, let's elect a woman. And I'm good for that, but she has to be the right one.
Right.
You know, it has to be somebody that is actually espousing the things that we in the base are saying. I am getting so sick and tired of Democrats not saying what the base wants them to say. They are not, we are, this is a representative republic based on democratic ideas. That means the people have a say. Stop telling us what you want us to think. We already know what the hell we want. Give it to us.
Or what's best for us. We did what was best for you.
Yes, thank you. But this whole demographic historical push, if it was Elizabeth Warren, I'd be damn right, time for a woman. Okay?
Right, and for me, being a woman, I can say that I would be delighted to see a woman president. But for me, I have to, it's not just one. I do not feel that Hillary Clinton should be that first one. But for me, it's an even bigger thing with Hillary Clinton and watching, you know, the Benghazi committee hearing. You know, it was like, okay, so is this what a Clinton presidency is going to look like? You said your sworn enemies are the is the GOP. We saw that.
Right. They're gonna and I am so glad that Secretary Clinton held her composure and she did and she survived it, because we know Benghazi is bullshit. We've been known Benghazi, because if they were so concerned about Benghazi, they would have burnt Reagan for the barracks in Libya. And not Libya, but
right.
Lebanon. They would have burnt Bush for 9/11. They burnt Clinton for mistakes that took place. I can't even think about it. What happened during the Clinton administration that a bunch of us died? Oh, the first trade center bombing. Okay, so they're not really concerned. We know that the Republicans are doing what they're doing to excite their base. And as Democrats, we and people on the left, on the progressive side, we have to understand that Benghazi was about them exciting their base. okay?
Right.
And it slapped the backfire. And it, but see, what it did is it backfired
but
on Democrats.
But it's politics on both sides. It's politics on both sides. The Democrats are using this. You know, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Thank you. And this is Hillary, this is, and we all realize that this is a Clinton stamp that's on this, because the Clintons are best to, they are the best dog waggers in the world. They will wag the dog in a heartbeat. If you pressing down on the Clintons will make sure if there ain't a crisis for them to exploit to get their, your eyes off their ass, they will create one. Okay?
Right.
I'm saying this. So the thing is, we Hillary has declared that the Republicans are her enemy. They are not going to let her take that back during the general election. You think Bernie, and everybody said, well, Bernie Clinton won't be able to work with a Republican House and a Republican Senate. Hell, he done got more done than she did in during his time as a senator, because he does know how to work across the aisle. He
right, he's already done it.
Right, and he's not declared them the enemy. Yes, we're diametrically opposed to a lot of the policies that exist in the conservative universe, but at the same time, he knows there's area for compromise, and he's shown it time and time again that he can be that voice of compromise.
And he
now,
showed that at Liberty University, his speech at Liberty University. That was, if you haven't seen it by now, and if you haven't, you haven't been on Facebook long enough, but go check it out. It's a really, really great speech.
Since I'm not into my dirty list, you know, DeKalb County forever stays on my dirty list. I mean, for you who are not Georgia listeners, who are from other parts of the state, or the other country rather, DeKalb County is one of the metro counties of the Atlanta metropolitan region. It is also the bluest county in the state. I mean, heavily, and it is run primarily by Democrats. But yet, Georgia, for you that don't know, Georgia is the most ranked in ethics, is ranked at the bottom. We are number 50th when it comes to ethics. We are the most corrupt state in the union. With that being said, DeKalb County probably ranks somewhere on the bottom of that list, well, as counties in Georgia. I'm not going to say they are the most corrupt, or as I would say, lacking integrity or transparency in the state, but they're close to it, because I'm sure there's some rural counties that might got DeKalb beat. But
wow,
the fact is that those rural counties don't have a major media market in it, so they don't get, you know, their little newspapers holler and scream, but nobody's ever going to pay them any attention. So I would be less likely to do some stupid shit in DeKalb County than I would anywhere else, because they don't have eyes on them. And
this is the
dumb shit of the moment right here, because it kind of swapped up as I was reading my Facebook feed this morning. At first, I was going to go after the whole CEO, city manager deal, but I'm going to get into that. What I'm going to get in is the Senate district, the Senate 43 district race with Angela Moore. Now, they just disqualified this woman because they say she don't live in the district. Now, this is something that I heard before the race even started, when they was talking about her possibly jumping in. There was a rumor that she didn't live in the district. That was already out there. And I'm sure if I heard it, Ms. Moore heard it. So you should have been prepared for this when it came, when you stepped in the door. You should have known where your house was. And it's very simple. All you had to do is go to the Secretary of State. She could have went to the My Voter app, put in her address, and
it's out there, and it's real easy to access.
Yes, and if you're going to run for public office, know what the hell you're running for and where you live, okay? This is real simple. This is real simple.
So she's pulling up.
Yes,
she pulling up. I don't know nothing about birth and no baby kind of defense.
Yeah, and then you got people who are defending her. Well, she's a couple of yards outside the district. She really didn't know, because she lived. And you don't do that kind of stuff. And let me give big ups to my homeboy, George Cheedy, and Peace Pundit.
and Fox 5 Atlanta.
And Dominique Huff over the 10th Amendment, because they've been calling it. And see, I was being quiet because I'm kind of, you know, I was kind of involved in this whole situation for, you know, being involved in some campaigns. So I was being quiet.
Mm-hmm.
But big ups to these two gentlemen, because while this defense has been taking place on Facebook and on other social media, they've been bringing the information to them straight up. You know, stop defending people. That's one thing I need for you, everybody. Stop defending your folks when you know you're wrong. Get somewhere and shut up.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. If you don't know whether or not you live in the district or not, maybe you shouldn't be running for public office, because what else don't you know?
Thank you. Thank you. Just because you got a little money, or you can get access to a little money, you think because you have some friends and you belong to some organizations, does not make an elected official, does it? It does not. So, I mean, some of these people that are running, I'm like, okay, I love your passion for your community. I love your passion for your community. Yes, you belong to some great organizations. You may even lead a couple of them, but it does not mean that you need to be an elected official. Because once you are an elected official, you just don't represent the groups that you belong to. You just don't represent your party. You represent your district and extension your state. And there are people inside of your districts that are not members of your clique. You have to represent for the whole of it. If I would ever be elected, I am a Democrat. I would run as a Democrat on the ballot, but I know that if I got elected, I would have to represent the Libertarians, the Greens, the Republicans, the Reformists, and all of those other folks in my district. I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to talk to you all, because I'm sure that if I ran something completely Democrat, it will have reverberations. If I ran something completely Republican, it's going to have reverberations. There's going to be some unbalancing of the force.
Mm-hmm.
We want to govern for the best of all of our people. Okay? Now, the second part of that goes back, since I said I switched it around some, is the little portion dealing with the CEO and county manager deal. And I think I might have talked about this last week. I'm not sure. But it's still bothering me, because we want to change the nature of the type of government we have here in DeKalb County, and not change the nature of the type of people that we have governing. I mean, hell, if we had a king and if this was a monarchy and DeKalb County had a count. For those people who don't understand where the word county come from, if you lived in an aristocratic situation, the head of the county would be called the count. So y'all know. So we'll say we had a count. Okay, we had a count. We had some wealthy landowner. If he's an asshole, he's an asshole.
Y'all what you are.
Okay, now if I overthrew the count, let's say we started a revolution and we decided, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to have a republic. And then we elect his asshole brother to run the new republic. We still got an asshole. It didn't change anything.
Do you think assholeism is like a genetic trait or something? Can assholeism be passed down through generations? You know, we may have to.
Assholism is a learned behavior. I do. I don't think you're born an asshole.
No, it could be a genetic trait. I think some people are born to it.
And the thing is, now we have political operatives weighing in, supporting this change. And I'm like, and this comes down to the new word, yeah, everybody. There's a new phrase. And it was coined by my good friend John Jackson.
And this should be good.
This is a new phrase. He coined a couple of them. The first one that he coined earlier this month was low energy loser, which I learned. But
The new one has been, and this is particularly for my political opposite class, it's called political ass kissery.
Oh, that is a terrible affliction, a terrible affliction. Oh, we need to have a telethon for that.
And this is what this is what political ass kissery is. We should be the gatekeepers and powers behind the throne. Seriously, we're the experts who have time to read policy, to go out there and do the expert. And your job as the elected official or candidate is to go out there and make that policy become fact. Time kissing the ass of the folks who we're trying to put in office and not doing what we want to do, then we upset the universe. We upset the universe. The experts allowing this is like the coach of the football team allowing the players to do whatever the fuck they want to do on the football field. There's no strategy. There's no plays. We just go throw and run the ball.
But okay? I got to dance for them dollars, Scout.
Has to go away. I'm funding an effort to eliminate political ass kissery. Okay?
It's a terrible affliction, people.
Because this particular political operative refuses to kiss his ass. I'm just letting you know, I won't do it. I come in to help out whoever I'm going to help out. And if I tell you something, I'm not telling you something just because I feel like watching you jump through hoops. I'm telling you something because it's for your own good. Okay? Don't tell me what the hell you want, how the hell you feel, because guess at the end of the day, you are in the wrong position to tell me that because you feel like that you really ready to put your ass on the line, but the sign says you're not. So we have political operatives got to start pushing a little bit differently toward our candidates and our elected officials because we're allowing them to run them damn muck. Okay, we're allowing them to run amok. We're the experts. They admit it all the time. Every time, at least in the Georgia state legislature, every time something fucked up happens and a bill gets passed, that's the first thing our elected officials tell me. I didn't read the bill. My staff did. They told me.
Right.
And I find that hard to believe.
And they should be ashamed to say that out loud. You just look at them like, you know, you just said that out loud to me.
Yeah, but I find that hard to believe with the level of political ass kissery going on. I find that very, very, very hard to believe that their staff told them to vote a certain way. I can believe the staff told them something opposite, and they did something else, but, we're just blaming on the staff. That's what I believe, but that's neither here nor there. So that's my dirty list. You know, I'm Hillary, get back on the issues, screw Benghazi, okay? Let's get
them. I'm tired of hearing about your damn – yeah, I'm tired of your damn emails. I need that T-shirt.
You can't get shit right. I'm sorry. Cause this is even the emails, what is about Benghazi? Okay? We need to get over that. America, if we're going to, and I guess I ain't finished, but America, if we're going to be out there in the world playing world policemen, every once in a while, some of us are going to die. That's the risk that we take. And I'm not being insensitive to the fact that we had American men and women die in defense of our nation, but that's why we need to be really, really careful about where we send our people, because
Amen.
They may die. They may die. That is a part of going to war and putting your people in the harm's way. They may die. There's no magical fix to keep people from dying. America is not Superman. I know we think we Captain America and we run around with a shield that is impervious to all weapons thrown at it, but that shit is television. Okay, Americans are walking, talking, bleeding, and dying all across this world, defending the ideas that our government has said that we believe in.
But not just Americans, innocent civilians of the countries that we are causing a ruckus in. It's bigger than just us Americans who are dying. We've killed more people in Iraq and Afghanistan than we have here. And if you're worried about terrorism so bad, let's start focusing on the domestic terrorism that is, you know, we got black people over here. You're trying to bring freedom elsewhere. We got black people over here fighting to be free right here. You know, terrorism,
right.
We're losing millions
to
gun violence.
We got Native Americans who, and this is the thing, we sit there and we talk about all of these things that these foreign dictators do. But do we realize that we have Native Americans, and the Native Americans have probably gotten used to it, but we have them on reservations. Now, true enough, the reservations are similar to the Palestinian Authority. Have we not even thought about that?
No, because there's money involved. We have to, you know, I'm sorry. We have to make money. Let's see. For those in the Metro Atlanta area, there was a story that broke this week about there used to be a public elementary school that served the residents of Capitol View, Adair Park, off of Metropolitan Parkway. That was turned into a charter school, Latin Academy. The story broke this week that Latin Academy, more than $500,000 was missing and was kind of stunning. Everybody, you know, the founder of this school by the name of Chris Quinnan, everybody loved Chris. Chris was like, oh, he's got just a brilliant mind, and, you know, everybody thought he was fabulous. Well, you know, that's also the mark. Brilliance is the mark also of good con people. And my boy got down to $600,000. That's a nice take. No one saw this coming, but you know, these kids are left. This community is left without a school. Period. You know, it's bad enough you close the public school and you disperse these children to other community schools after the foreclosure crisis basically decimated that neighborhood. It looked like, you know, some parts of it resembled the Ninth Ward in Louisiana, but there was just no storm of nature that came through. It was the storm of Wall Street. So he's absconded with this money, and everyone is clutching their pearls. And, oh, my Lord, but I think people need to understand that charter schools, for some people, for those who are unscrupulous, this is the next best thing to dope money. And the hustles that are going on in education, and we talked about education inequality, this is one of the ways it happens. You've got people out there who are just rolling. You know, you've got this grant money, and you're basically just saying, here, do wonderful things with it, which is the mentality of a lot of people. If we just throw money at it, we'll improve things. You got to watch where the money goes. And I'm not, you know, I personally, I'm an outlier in the progressive community because of my personal experience. I'm for charter schools in the sense of what they were originally envisioned. I'm not for the bastardized version, but there are some really good ones out there that are doing great things in communities. I think it's a discussion that, you know, we really need to have as progressives and liberals, just people on the left, because there is a lot of polarization, and we have a amendment coming up. But Chris Quinnan, you're going to have to get that money back, and he's on my dirty list for this year. There will also Rise Up is also having an emergency town hall meeting. You can find it on Facebook, the event. I don't have all the details in front of me right now. I urge everyone to be there, whether you're for charters or against them, because we really need to have this discussion. And I'm kind of tired of the all-or-nothing mentality, so I will definitely be there. And also, we talked about Hillary Clinton. She made my dirty list for, you know, basically saying, and I talked about this earlier, about how the policies of her husband, you know, the question was asked of her how she would repudiate some of the policies that her husband instituted while he was president. And she basically said, well, you know, we kind of did it to protect you from the Republicans. That's not going to cut it, and it is very offensive to those who are still suffering under the effects of mass incarceration and all that it has wrought. To just say, you know what, we did this. Yeah, I know you're locked up and over this, but, you know, I can't imagine what would be worse, and what could Republicans have done that could have been any worse. But on the same token, it is what people ask for, you know. So I can understand on some point that they were giving the people what they wanted, but as a public official, if you know it's wrong, you have to make that argument and convince the people why it's wrong. I think politicians need to adopt a bit of what doctors, I don't believe it's officially a part of the Hippocratic Oath, but first do no harm. When you are coming up with policy, you must ask yourself, does this cause harm? And if it does, it's not good policy, period. So she gets a DSD for that. Let's see, as far as dirty lists go, I'm going to keep it short because we need to get into our show. It's like 2:36. But I also wanted to mention a special, and it's not so much a dirty list, but a plea. In Georgia, you know, we're all focusing on 2016. 2015 is coming. It's here, okay? Tuesday, November 3rd is Election Day. There are local and special state and state special elections that are going on around the state. We always, always, always focus on the national election, you know, but what we have to understand, and regardless of who your candidate is, what actually helps your candidate is leading in that they have a wave of politicians who are going to help them affect policy. And that starts from the bottom up. And most of the problems that we encounter don't come out of Congress. They come out of local, you know, county, state policies. So I'm urging voters, because we have saw in 2014 some historic lows. And with the raise of political awareness through social media, it doesn't seem to be translating at the polls. So for those voters, and I still hear in Georgia, you know, I'm not going to bother to vote because Obama's not on the ballot, or, you know, nothing ever changes. Well, if you vote, nothing ever changes. If you don't vote and nothing ever changes, maybe it's because you're not voting. If you want to make change, you're going to have to either find a candidate to support or be that candidate for you. And you have to stop being apathetic and unaware of what's going around you on the local on the local and state level, because today's asshole can be tomorrow's president. This is just the track that they take, and they all usually start out coming in this way. So pay attention. Go to the website, the Secretary of State's website. Look for the MVP page. Go to that. It will give you information on who's on your ballot. Get out there and vote. There are elections going on that will decide who is your mayor, you know, who's members of your city council. We've got a female running out in Powder Springs, Georgia. There's so many races that impact you that you really, really need to be up on. And you can't say the system doesn't work if you've never participated in it. You can't say the system doesn't work if you're not in that system. You gotta get in there and flip it to make it work for you. The system's working very well for other people. If it's not working for you, it's because your people aren't. And so, you know, that's the bottom line. So I'm urging everybody, November 3rd, if you're in Georgia, if you're in any other state, know when your elections are, because every single year is election year. So with that said, that's pretty much my dirty list for this week, and we're kind of running behind. So we're just going to go into our topic today. And, Scott, I'm going to let you do the intro on our topic. We're going to talk about gender inequality. We kind of had an interesting conversation yesterday about this that pretty much was a show. So, but, Scott, you want to take us into what this is going to be about?
Yeah. You know, we've been talking about inequality and that being the biggest problem in America. You know, we talk about, if you look at all the different issues we have in our country today, you can track it all back to the root cause of it being inequality. Now, in our first series, our first part of this series, we tried to do a breakdown on what inequality was, and we realized there will probably never be what we would call pure equality. But we can bridge those gaps and make those gaps more, we can make them narrower. Now, we even talked about education. We even talked about economics. Now we're starting to talk more about people a little bit. And gender is one of those places in America where inequality takes place and it hurts our communities in ways that we don't even see. Because we all have different ideas on what on gender roles, and we have different ideas on what gender is supposed to be and what it looks like. For instance, when you say gender inequality, and I had a conversation with some people yesterday talking about what's the first thing that comes to your mind when you say gender inequality? And the answer itself that I got from the majority of people that I talked to had a tad of inequality to it, because the first thing everybody said was, oh, women are, paid less, and, and women are this and women are that. And I said, okay, you're right about that. Is there anything that men suffer from? Got quiet. Because we have a system in a society that is deemed to be paternalistic, it is that we're good and that men don't have any issues. But there are some things men actually suffer from inequality on. But I'm not going to go there just yet. Not going there just yet.
Okay. Because it is
a paternalistic. Then we talked about a little bit. Then we talked a little bit about transgender. Mm-hmm. Because now we have little boys who want to be little girls, who feel, they'll put it like this, we have little boys who feel like that the inside they are really girls, and we have girls who feel like inside they're really boys. And we have this controversy on what they should have been able to identify as. So there's a lot of identity and there's a lot of changing ideas on what gender actually is. So when you put all of that together, it becomes a very complex subject that you attack from different angles. Now, one of the things that I talked about, me and you were talking about yesterday, was that how when we start trying to equal things out, we usually do it by taking something from somebody else to balance the scale instead of adding to somebody to bring the skills to equal. You know, that's what starts to happen. And, it is amazing, you remember the conversation we had yesterday. And as a man,
a lot of that perception.
Yeah, as a man, I feel a lot of the time that people want to take away from my masculinity to increase female rights. And I'm like, okay, I'm all for, women having equal pay, and all for, I'm for equality. Because if it's things that I do naturally as a man, like for instance,
like peeing, standing up.
If you can do that and you're a woman, fine, but don't tell me I have to sit down. if you can do it, fine, but don't tell me I have to sit down to do it because you sit down to do it.
Well, I could be standing up. It would just be a little messy, but okay, you know.
Yeah, you know, there's fundamental differences between us that we talked about yesterday about balance.
But here's the thing.
Men and women being women, and we balance each other.
Okay.
Not that one is superior to the other.
Right. It's the yin and the yang of the thing, okay?
Right.
And for me, you know, for me, the minute you said taking away from me, my brain said, no, 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 no. Nobody's trying to take anything away from let a man be a man and let a woman be a woman. But you only hold up half the sky. I hold
right.
up the other side with you. We hold it down together.
Right.
And what we need to do, and a lot of this problem, we can argue about, you know, public policy and laws, you know, because some of the most interesting conversations, well, I wouldn't say interesting, but, you know, you get on Twitter, and if you tweet something of a particular subject, you're guaranteed to get these trolls that come in. And Twitter trolls are fun, you know. But, you know, one of the things we talked about, or I was having a quote-unquote discussion about, was the Equal Pay Act and the perception that we already have it. You know, you have this law, so you don't need any more protections because you have legal recourse. But here's the thing. I don't have legal recourse because let me get a job and ask somebody, how much do you make? You know, the first thing you're told when you get this, don't discuss your pay with anybody. If you discuss your pay with somebody, you can be terminated. So how can I use the law if I don't know how
right.
much someone is making?
Right.
Okay.
And I do believe that's the first indication that something is wrong when we can't have that discussion.
Right.
When we have pay scales, and you pretty much know that I am a technician A and I get paid this, or I'm a clerical worker, you know, 3, and I get paid this. But when you got people up in there and they just got a blank title and everybody's negotiating their salaries, and then you start getting what they're scared of is that people will start questioning, why does that person get paid this much, and why does this person get paid that much? When easily if we just set out and say, hey, this is the criteria, and you can get raises up to this point, and if you've been there X amount of years, you make X amount of money. In certain jobs, that work very well. Now, if you're a salesman, you may make more money than somebody else because you're making commission, you may got more sales, you got more clients. You can understand that, but I have never understood why, if you, like you said, how can I even deal with pay discrimination if I don't know what the pay is?
Right, and that's, you know, and you know, we can bring about public policy to try to equal that out and to provide the transparency, but another part of this, besides the legislative way, is the way we're taught to look at what men and women roles do. And one of the parts of the discussion we had prior to the show was about, you know, I was telling you about, you know, how I may be talking with some of my female friends. Now, my husband and I, we don't look at the gender roles. Like when my kids were young, he worked days and I worked nights. I mean, he worked nights and I worked days. So I watched the kids during the day. He did the nights and in the early morning. So he's done the cooking. He's done cleaning, you know, the roles in our house. If there's something dirty, clean it. I don't care, you know, if it's a man or woman. I'll get out there and cut the grass. He doesn't like to, you know, he's a city boy. He grew up in New York City. He don't know nothing about cutting grass and trimming hedges and stuff. But, you know, he'll cut the grass, but there's a lot of stuff that I'll do because, A, I like it. B, it got to get done, you know. And, you know, and for I'll have talks with my girlfriends and I'll be like, you know, okay, I'm cooking dinner. Why are you cooking dinner? Because I want to eat. And some of these folks can't cook in this house. And so, you know, I'm cooking dinner. Well, you know, you're giving in the patriarchy. come on now, I'm cooking. I like to cook, right? And if I fix my husband a plate, it's because I want to be nice, not because I was taught that a woman must serve or be subservient, which is taught, I don't, you know, and you know that's what Southern Baptist faith teaches you, that a woman must be subservient to her man. I don't even understand what that means. But
you know, my mother has a very interesting, you know, take on that. And she uses the word submission. And when she uses the word No, but this is the thing. She said there's a, she said it's all according to how you look at that word. And it was like, okay, explain that to me. And she said,
yeah, explain that to me.
Brought it up. She said submission is to come up under the mission. And I was like, okay. She was, so she, what her thing was is that if the household has a mission, we all submit to the mission of the household, whether it's not to go buy a new house or to create wealth or raise the children, whatever it is, the man and woman have come together to come up with a plan on how this family is going to operate, and they have submitted to, they've come up under that mission. That's been, and that's how she teaches it. Now, and that I agree
right,
with.
Right, but that's not, but that's go. Not. That's taking
but
the word and breaking up sub and mission and using it in that definition. But the word submission basically tells you to yield to the will of an authority of a person. And that is the popular, that is how it is most accepted.
Right.
That is the most accepted interpretation of it and how most churches teach it, particularly the black church. You will submit to your husband. Let Mr. Hopkins tell me I need to submit to something, and I'll see y'all in about 6 years because I'm going to catch a case. So, but here's the thing. He is my partner. I go to him for counsel. I go for him the advice, not because I was taught that way, you know, I have to submit or you can't do anything till you run it by your husband. It's because we're in this together.
Well, we should run it by each other.
And I respect his advice, and he comes to me for advice, and that's how it should work. You should not have assigned gender roles defining your relationship
right.
and what you should be doing.
Right.
And I really get, but we haven't been. Oh, we got a caller! Yay!
Yeah. Let's see what caller one. Let's have caller one chime in.
Hi,
it's good afternoon, caller.
Long time no call.
Hey, Ro,
hi guys.
How you been?
Oh, my goodness. Y'all don't have that much time on your show for me to tell you that one, but I'm going to say politically correct. I've been awesome.
Well, thank you, darling. Thank you very much. Well, let me ask you, woman to woman, okay, what do you feel? Gender, we're talking about gender equality. Have you experienced, what has been your experience as a female, particularly an African-American female, living in the South? What has, do you have any experiences where you can say you definitely feel the impact of gender inequality, whether it be work or socially? How has it impacted you?
It has impacted me holistically in every aspect of my life. Since I guess it would be demographic, I don't know. However, in Georgia, that's where I'm born and raised, and that's why I do all of my working and everything else professionally, I do realize as a female, let alone an African-American female, there are so many barriers that are almost impenetrable. But I always try to find ways to reinvent myself and work around those barriers, but it should not take that. And there's a vast amount of inequality, I know for sure, from my own experiences in Georgia, for women as a whole, let alone an African-American woman. In the professional workplace, it's just not the place that you are accepted. I mean, I have been getting even barricaded and bombarded by organizations that need my endorsement just because I am an African-American professional black woman. And I can
well, you know, they need one.
From saying things. Yes.
We're not
yes,
racist because
them.
We – so you've been chosen as the token black – you're the diversity token.
Diversity token that is only good for bringing in a certain amount of awareness so that I'm more competent and capable of articulating what needs to be said. But as far as any position or any main function, I'm being barricaded by an organization that truly benefits from my abilities and skills. So I'm at the point now I'm getting ready to hit the mute button on that organization and do something more or less for and create my own, because I already have my own nonprofit, and I'll just work under my own umbrella. And I'm going to leave it at, I won't call the name of that organization, but if they're listening, they know exactly who they are.
Did I find that interesting? I find that interesting because, in a way, that's what goes with what I'm talking about when I talk about with the conversation we was having yesterday, Stacey. Is because let's say we talked about this dealing with the Clinton campaign. We, and particularly organizations, want so bad to be making demographic history or trying so hard to be diverse that we will go say, okay, we're sitting around the table, we're having a discussion. As a matter of fact, I had this discussion the other day in the formation of a group. And we was talking about, because we were looking at the people who joined us so far, they're all male. So we like, we really need to add some women to this group. And my first thing was like, well, okay, we need to add women to this group, but let's make sure we bring the right women into this group. Let's not just pick the first woman that shows up that fits the demographic target that we want, because she may still not be what will fit, may not still fit the group. She has to fit the group and add something to the group other than the fact that her chromosomes say she's female and the color of her skin is black. Or the color
and
of her skin
we are
Latino.
We are
coveted. Right, because the thing is, to me, I would see it much more as an offensive thing for you just to bring me in just because of that. I would want to make sure that if I brought in a female, that I want that woman to not only be demographically acceptable, but I want her to be feeling like that she plays a crucial part in the organization, because a lot of times we bring people in to fit demographic tokens or diversity quota just to fill that quota, and we don't make them feel part of the team. We don't allow them to
chime in on that statement. Let me chime in on your statement and make this statement. In regards to my situation, I have the knowledge, skills, abilities, credentials, and proven work history to validate my ability with this organization. This organization is overtly racist. I mean, and I don't, and it is not even because I'm a woman, but I'll take being a woman with my color since I am both minorities. But it's just when you know overt racism is overt racism. And that's something
right.
that we cannot deny as well. When you bring a person like me onto a situation such as that, and I'm constantly being pushed away no matter how I'm communicating, hey, I'm willing to do this, I'm willing to do that, I'm willing to do this. It is quite a shame when I have to go all the way through New York and Pittsburgh to do what I'm doing because Georgia is so racist, I can't even do anything here.
That's what I'm talking about. You can't even bring people in, and we are not allowing them to fully participate. For whatever reason, we just want them there to say, oh, when we take the picture of the board, oh, there's an African-American, there go a woman. You know what I'm saying? That person be very well qualified, but we're not even giving them the chance to put in that. And that's a part of the inequality that exists, that we will allow ourselves to call ourselves, you know, leveling the playing field, but it just smokes them, it's smoke and mirrors. And we see that a lot.
Exactly.
So we've got a
theme of racism once again rearing its ugly head. Even though, you know, gender inequality, you know, that's basically the unequal treatment of
right.
women or of individuals that are based upon their gender. But we also have another construct that is, or another dynamic that's flowing through in that is racism. And and I know there's going to be listeners going, well, they're supposed to be talking about gender inequality. Well, we are, because it's a subset of it. And one of the problems, because, bro, I definitely can attest to what you're saying. You know, I've done some work with nonprofits, and, you know, it's like somebody sits in and they go, okay, we need a black person and we need a female. And then they look at you and they think, oh, a twofer.
A twofer.
Yes. Yes.
And they come to you, and, you know, because there has been some talk with some of my activist friends of mine, you know, we're all kind of, we're looking back, and, I think people are like, you know, we're down with the issues. We're definitely down with the issues, but it's kind of like a silent boycott going on because, you know, we feel that we are on the plantation when we get in the nonprofit structure and we disappear and we see men who are often put up as the face of this organization are being put out there, and the women are in the background doing all of the grunt work. I mean, we saw this, and this is a theme that has run through, you know, such movements, particularly most notably the civil rights movement, where men, you know, when you talk about the civil rights movement, the first thing you think of is Dr. King and, you know, William Randolph and, you know, Randolph and all of these, you know, all of these men. And we don't talk about the women who were just as powerful and who were the true engine who made that movement go. But, you know, now it's really, really, it's worse because, you know, to be a black woman and operating in that structure, it's like we have to fight so many battles. And to have to, you know, first of all, you're only trotted out when they need a group picture. See, we're diverse. We have her, black and white. You know,
as a part of that also, as you're talking about that and gender and, you know, the gender and race component, you know, we had talked about this earlier and we're still trying to put together this particular show or trying to get it out there, but There's a woman by the name of Dr. Helen Jackson, and she's a matter of fact of some you know he's come onto the show a couple of times. John Jackson, we talked about him earlier in the show. He's an investment banker here in the Atlanta area, and his mom is a nuclear physicist.
Okay.
An actual one. She doesn't play one on TV.
Yeah. So, and exactly. She had an issue. She had an issue, and I would love to have her come, you know, talk to her about this. But she was dealing with the fact that, you know, she's a woman. She's African American. She's working in this research project. And, you know, they bring you in. They brought her in. And then they bring in, you know, as a part of keeping it diverse, so you get a sprinkle of white women in there also.
Mm-hmm.
Now, guess who, when we have to do the project lead, guess who gets to be the face?
some do. Let me guess. It's got testicles.
No, it's the white woman. And the thing was, it got me when I said, I was like, okay, what's so bad about it? This white woman's not even, she doesn't even have a doctorate. She's working on her doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
You got an actual doctorate who is a nuclear physicist, who is the one who's leading the research project, the one who's, you know, doing it. And this person is the helper, but they're putting this person out as the one who's making all the breakthroughs.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah!
And then the female side of the issue, because we talked about this when we talked about feminism, about the difference between the black feminists and the white feminists, and this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we still go back and we talk about how men will be led. And you got certain situations now because some groups are being so very overly proactive about gender inequality and making it more of about being female inequality, that you may have men, I've suffered from this one, whereas I've went and applied for certain situations, certain jobs, and certain positions. You know, you were qualified, but, you know, you're not the fit. And it's like, so what's the fit? Then I find out you can't say it because that's still discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
You can't come out and say, well, we prefer to have a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So now you got something, particularly in politics, and we've noticed this, is that regardless if you're black or white and you're a Democrat, they prefer to have a woman run.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, if a man gets in a race, he actually drops a couple of percentage points. And that's kind of messed up, because the fact is we could be missing out. You know, my thing has always been the qualification.
Right.
I will take a woman any day if she is qualified to do the job. But if I got a man and a woman, and the man happens to be, not just because he's a man, I would never say that, but just to say he happens to be more qualified.
Right.
He should be given the equal chance to participate. There shouldn't be an automatic barrier in that, well, we really would love to have a woman in this position. And the moment we put that mindset in, then we cause the inequality to still stay at its current gap, because what we're doing is saying, hey, we want to fix this problem so bad that we're going to eliminate you from the situation for a while, and we're only going to do a show. That causes a problem itself. And you can hear white men talk about this same situation in America today, which, you know, we understand, we don't talk about white privilege, but there's a lot of situations, and we can talk about a particular political candidate who suffered from this, which was Dr. Brad. He was running against a woman, a white woman, a black woman, and a black man. Now, I told him when we was running, you know what? They see you as the white guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually an immigrant, and if he had played up more of the fact that he was an immigrant, it would have gotten some extra percentage points. We find this out now. In the back, look at hindsight being 2020, we could have gotten some more votes by him being an immigrant, because he was no longer the white guy.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this, you know, and this is one of the things when we talk about inequality, when we're talking about the people directly, when we're talking about economics and education, we're talking about the policy decisions and the systems. But once we start talking race and gender, we're actually talking about people. And one of the things that you will see conservatives throw into it, that has, you know, every lie has an element of the truth for it to be believable. But we have to be careful about not making sure that we're not putting people in position just because of the fact they fit a certain demographic.
Right.
Because
I would find that
offensive if I was hired for something just because I was a black guy. Oh, we want you to be on the team because you're black.
Can I chime in and say something as a human resource person? Personally,
sure.
Myself, and that's why I don't work for anyone with my HR degrees. I always advocate for people. I don't work for any entity, but I have bachelor's and a master's in human resources. I believe that anytime you're hiring, it should be based on knowledge, skills, and abilities, tangible and intangibles as well. If the scoreboard balances out, whoever has the highest score, I don't want to know their gender. I don't want to know anything about them other than the knowledge, skills, and abilities and how we rank them on their number cards in their interviews. And that's what they should be hired by. I feel like nothing should matter other than those things when you're hiring for a position. And that's exactly why I will never work for an organization, and I will always work for the people and represent people who have been discriminated against.
Because it only works on paper, though. I mean, I agree with you that we, you know, that shouldn't even be a factor in it. And that works. Usually that works on paper. But once you go in for that first interview, then all of a sudden, you know what? We think we're going to go in another direction, or
exactly,
you know,
and that's the
you know, we're looking at other people, and we'll get back to you. So, you know, once you show up, and you know, there was just recently an article about a black woman who was sending out resumes. She had, I think, that went back to the Raven Simone thing with the Watermelandria thing, and how she was sending out resumes with a, you know, kind of a quote unquote white sounding name, and, you know, how she was getting, you know, more feedback, more positive feedback when she was portrayed as being a white woman instead of with the same qualifications, everything identical. Than when as her as a black woman. But you know, there's a part of this whole thing that has to do with us as a people, as a society. We have to unlearn some learned behavior. We all come with, you know, we come. It seems like humans come pre-installed with a bias program that we must often reprogram and check against. We all have it, whether it's intended or unintended, we do display it, and it's something that, you know, we all need a constant mic check on. But, you know, it's more than just, as far as gender inequality, it goes so far outside of employment, you know, education, as we said. It really, you know, and health. We have women who are dying because of lack of access to family planning and health services. You know, we're losing mothers and newborns because of it. And that, you know, that form of inequality is killing people. We have, you know, and gender inequality can appear in so many ways. I did a talk a few years ago with the Georgia Association of Black Officials and Black Elected Officials, and we talked about, you know, gender inequality, and I was talking about the little ways in which it manifests itself. One of the ways is one way people really don't think about: consumer products. Okay, take something with the identical ingredients, you put it in a pretty pink package, you jack up the price a dollar or two, and bingo. Why do women's shirts at the cleaners cost more than men's shirts? Are they? You know, I mean, so, you know, we're being financially exploited, you know, through corporations who have figured out how to take gender inequality and actually profit off of it.
I'm going to tell you, I got a theory on that one. Now,
am I going to be mad at you after you say this?
You may or may not be mad. But the thing is that if you look at it, you know, women have access to multiple streams of income. Multiple streams of income. The economic system in which we live in is run by a particular group of people. And these same group of people have already labeled this situation. Now, this is the thing. If you go back to the 1980s and you use one of Ronald Reagan's, you know, things, when he talked about the welfare queen. Okay, this is perception. This is, I'm not saying it is true. This is perception. Is that you have women. Women make their own money. Okay, because they out in the workforce. It is white men, and you know, and then some black men believe that, and it is, and some of us being taught in our gender roles that it is our job to give our money to women. So therefore, you have women getting extra income from the men in their lives. Then you have, you know, those women who don't have men but are receiving some type of assistance from the government. So you have this perceived notion that women have multiple streams of income.
Let's just clear up the perception. You're talking about conservatives, right? You're talking about how the right perceives. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, we need to clarify that because we were about ready to go for your throat, bro.
I'm
sitting here like, those pennies, that's an insult.
I'm feeling you, but go on. Do continue.
The economic system. So that, you know, just like, for instance, the first thing everybody cries about, again, conservatives, and you even got some people on the left who are playing like they're on the left. When we get to talking about raising the minimum wage, the first thing they say is it's going to cause the price to go up. If you give them more money, it's going to cause the price of things to go up. Because you know why? Because that's the first thing that they're going to do. Oh, there's more money. We can get more money. We're going to raise the price. So it's a belief system that women have control, more control over the purse strings than anybody else. So therefore, we're going to charge them more. Men ain't got time to go. We ain't got no money. They say we broke, but that's a lie.
Well, here's the problem with all of, but here's the flaw out of that whole mentality, out of all of that. We will never make any money when you have white women earning 77 cents on the dollar. So no matter how hard we work, we always going to be short. Black women make, I think, 60-something cents an hour. Latinos is in the 50s. So no matter how hard you work as a woman, no matter what you do, you're still short. And that's something they can't grasp through their heads. And as far as the services, you know, as far as we may have programs such, you know, government programs that are, you know, to help you in times, you know, of need, right? But that's presuming that those programs are available and you can get them, you can access them, and that you are approved for them. You know, we are right now, I mean, here in Georgia, you have people who are trying to get benefits who are being falsely told they are not able to get them, or they're having problems just trying to get them and keep them going. So it's a false presumption that there's all of this stuff out there, that you qualify for all of them, and that you have access to get them. But here's the thing. You can't talk to those folks about that. And a lot of that is not even gender. It's also gender and race. It's kind of tied together from there.
Tied themselves together. Now, I'm going to throw the curveball in there, because we talk about it's alluded to the link to the show. So we don't talk about men and women. Now, see, we've talked about it at the beginning of the show. We got the transgender group out there, the transgender citizens out. So now we have people who are choosing to be one gender or the other. And there's a level of discrimination and equality that comes along with that. Because let's say, for instance, we done seen where, you know, in sports, we've been seeing that's been talked about it, because there's been certain athletes that have been, you know, they said, well, he used to be a boy. We've had a couple instances of that. Then we got entertainers and people who are in reality shows who are starting to bring this out, Caitlyn Jenner. And then we got the kids, but see, those are sensationalist views of the situation. Now we get to talking about little Mike in kindergarten who wants to be Michelle. There's nothing wrong with Mike wanting to be Michelle. If that's really who he wants to be, that's who he feels like he is, and his parents are accepting of that, and that's what it is. But if you tell the school system that Mike now wants to go into the girls' bathroom and there has not been he wears a dress to school and has bows in his hair, but when he goes to the bathroom, he's pulling out a penis. The school system goes, no, that's a boy. And they go, no, it's a girl. No, it's a boy. No, it's a girl. Then we get into a whole different level there, because now we done throw the whole universe into a tailspin, because as well as we can agree that individuals should have the right to identify as they want to identify, how do we deal with it from a policy standpoint? When we've not even, it's something very new and something that we are starting to deal with in the open for the very first time, because we've always had transgendered people. We've all had it. You know, I can remember growing up that was dudes. Then now that I realize, that was actually a woman the whole time that dressed up like a guy all the time. And vice versa. I really thought that was a really ugly woman, but it was a dude dressed up.
You
like
know
a guy.
What? You go to your corner right now and pray for that. You go straight to your corner for that. You.
In the I'm sorry. I'm just telling you my experience.
No. You go to your corner right now. Go.
questions about people, and your mom goes and tells you, no, that was really a man, right? And I go, that explains it all now. But then there was a situation, I remember when I was young, there was this lady, and she was walking into the store, and I was like, ooh, daddy, look at her. She's so fine. You know, you try to impress your daddy that you're looking at girls. And he go, boy, that's amazing. And I go, huh?
Yeah, but you looked.
Back in the day, you didn't talk about it, because it was even when he said that, he didn't say it out loud. He said, boy, that's amazing. We had a case of dealing with it when I was in the service. I had a shipmate, and I will never say his name. I will never say his name because I promised I wouldn't. But he had a girlfriend who lived on Church Street in Newport News, or was in Norfolk. And if you're from Norfolk, you done been in the Navy, you know Church Street in Norfolk, you know what's over there.
Yeah.
He had a girlfriend, quote unquote, who lived over there. And we seen said girlfriend in transformation mode one day. And we went back to telling him, he was like, have you slept? This is the same girl he's talking about. We hadn't slept together. She a real good girl, this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. And we handled that in very hush-hush terms. And now in 2015, we deal with that in a very open way. Mm-hmm. And even as a progressive, we still have, you know, we're having a hard time. I think progressives are having a hard time dealing with it, because we haven't come up with the rules of how society is going to operate, because we're still dealing with inequality for those who are born male and female.
Exactly.
So how are we going to do well with those who are choosing to be one or the other?
But you're talking, but now we're talking about gender identity and gender discrimination, gender bias. But you know, at the end of the day, if you are a male opting to become a female, you're going to be short.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you identify, like Caitlyn Jenner. And, you know, there was a meme that was going out, you know, once she did a transformation, you know, congratulations, you now make 77 cents on the dollar. And that was kind of like the aha moment, you know, and I would really like to talk to her to see the changes that she saw, because I expect she's starting to get a taste of what the other side of that, the cool side of that pillow is, you know, and because of gender inequality, you know, it affects women, I mean, worldwide, okay? We have women overseas who don't get a choice or a say in who they want to marry, you know, with forced marriage. Human trafficking. Right. Human trafficking, you know, that's a part of, you know, how we're not looking at genders as being equal and using the female sex for profit and you know, for exploitation. There is, you know, it's really, really pervasive, and when you look at, you know, access to capital, you know, financial women, you know, we have a harder time finding money. And, you know, I'd love for John to talk about that one of these days.
Because we know we have asked that same question since we're talking about identity. We asked that same question when we were dealing a couple of months ago with Rachel Dolezal. How do you choose? You choose to be African American. So, well, how did that change your perception? So it's a man choosing to be a woman. You're choosing to be something that now, and that's the whole where the inequality becomes really kind of, you know, sickening, because I can be a man and choose to become a woman, and I'm going to now have to deal with some discriminations that I wouldn't have to deal with if I had remained a man. And vice versa. How would it affect a man becoming a woman becoming a man? Does it change any of her aspects of how her life is now? Well, you know, and I got a friend, I actually, now that I'm thinking about that, I should have probably called to see if you could be on the show. But I will have to talk to them first to make see if they want to talk about, because I might have to come revisit this whole transgender situation at a later date, because that just brought up.
Well, you know, for me, transgender, it boils down to this to me. There's only two sexes, male or female. You choose to identify with either one. But if you choose to identify as a female, once again, you're going to be on the short end of the stick because of not only societal views, but the systemic and institutionalized sexism that is pervasive throughout our society. So, you know, we've got, you know, whether what you choose to identify with, you know, if I was thinking of going transgender, I want to be a man. And in a way, I want to be a woman. There is, and so, you know, for those who choose to want to identify as a female, I say God love you and you're very bold and brave and have at it because you're going to catch hell just like the rest of us are out here. And it is very, very difficult and something that we really need to look at and have these conversations. Well, we need to have conversations because some of it we just simply can't legislate. We can't legislate everything. That's just the reality of a lot of it begins with us.
Like when it comes to gender and race, like I said, that deals with people and a lot of that deals with personal feelings. You know, feelings that you're raised up on in a community or whatever, and that context. And that's, you know, when I was sitting there and I thought of that LGBTQ thing in there, just because of the simple fact is that, yeah, you got people choosing to be women or men, and you're choosing to, and when you choose that, you're choosing to pick up the good and the bad that goes along with it. And so to me, when can we get to a point when we're just humans?
That's what I was about to say.
You know, when you can get to the fact I'm a human being and I'm capable of doing a job, I have feelings, you know, men and women both have feelings, and you know, whether or not, you know, black women get chastised for being angry and bitchy and this, that, and the other. Black men are not allowed to show emotions at all because then we are aggressive and threats. I mean, so you can't even display your humanity because people have assessed you in a certain way that that you can't do certain things. My black children cannot go out and play the same way, whether male or female, the same way a little white girl can, because like I was sitting there talking to somebody the other day, and this is a female issue, you know, because I know a lot of people who don't want their little girls playing with dolls. And in the black community, I keep hearing now women talking about, I'm not letting my baby play with my baby girl ain't playing with no doll. They ain't doing nothing but setting her up because I'm going to think she's going to be somebody's mama. But when a little white girl playing with a doll is innocent. If your little white boy is outside playing, you know, cops and robbers with guns, with toy guns, the police is not going to roll through his neighborhood and there's possibly not going to be anybody to be shot. Your black boy do it, you better do that somewhere where nobody can see you because if the cops see you, he might assume that it's a gun and you're getting shot.
That's more race than gender.
But what I'm saying is when we even come to dealing with different race, the different gender identities that we have today, they still have differences played because, like you said, because of race, when race comes in, which y'all can probably figure out where we're going next in the show. We'll be talking about race next week.
In regards to women inequality, the issue that we were originally talking about, let me ask this. Is there ever going to be a day in America where women are just really truly equal? And I ask this question with this as a side step, a part B to the question. That's in every aspect, far as employment, criminal justice system, healthcare, all of that great stuff, equal in everything, because the gender inequality is also fed by society as a whole regarding the fact that we women, and I am a woman, so I say we women, we definitely want equality, but what I've also learned that there's a difference in how women are treated with certain crimes versus males committing certain crimes that I kind of look at
right.
saying, well, that's just reinventing the gap between inequality when you want to give a woman a lesser sentence. So we get lesser pay and lesser sentences too. So we have to get this equality thing right in every aspect that is totally equal to help kill that stigmatism that exists on women, because when society sees women said we want to be treated equally, but then when
we
it
got
comes
a minute,
down to where side advantage, we don't want to talk about it. Oh, go ahead.
So Rose has left a question for everybody. Will we ever
She's left a question.
Yeah, so if you
I'm gonna
like,
say
you,
no. I'm gonna say no, not in this generation. We're not gonna. It may happen, Rose, but we're not gonna live long enough to see it.
I'm gonna possibly say, as human beings, being the humans the way they are. You know, it probably will never happen. Just because we, like we said, we started this series, there will never be a such thing as pure equality. We just looking to find ways to narrow those gaps, because there's always going to be, it's just like a lot of the problems we're talking about, they are completely first world problems because they get worse when we get into developed nations and in third world nations. So this is Down South and Dirty. And if you want to continue this conversation, go to Down South and Dirty Radio. And continue the conversation on the links under the show's tab. And we'll be talking to you. Peace.
Thank you.
Peace.
Bye. Peace.